This is Gary Scheinman.
Hi, this is Mikolaj Strawinski speaking, and you are listening to the Sound Architect Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the Sound Architect Podcast, where I'm joined by both Mikolaj Strawinski and Gary Scheinman to talk about the Metamorphosis soundtrack. Thanks for joining me today, guys. How are you?
We're very well. Yeah, thanks.
Really good.
Awesome. Well, it's a pleasure to have you both back on the show. And as I just said, we're going to be talking about the Metamorphosis soundtrack, which is quite fascinating to me. And I really wanted to put it to you both and dive straight into talking about Sprechstimme, if I'm saying that correctly, and how you utilize that.
First of all, why did we use Sprechstimme? Sprechstimme is a German word for a style of singing that was first used by the great German-American composer Arnold Schoenberg. And it is a style that is, to me, in my mind, and I think that's why we chose it, that is really relates to the Expressionist era of German art in the early 20th century, which of course Kafka's Metamorphosis fits right into. So that's why we chose it. So it really is a style that Sprechstimme means half spoken, half sung. And it had several valuable assets to it. First of all, it really, maybe only to a few people, but I think anybody interested, it ties the Metamorphosis book, which is Kafka's most famous story, to this expressionist era of art in the early 20th century. And to me, that was, I think, part of the value of it. Plus, it has the added value of having this ironic, almost ironic humor, shall I say. It's not ha-ha humor, but it has this irony to it in the way it is sung.
Yeah.
And at least to our era, it might not have in Arnold Schoenberg's time. It was pretty insane. It was pretty crazy. It was a very radical new style. But I just really felt like it really helped our score create, not only the era, but the irony, humor that is inherent in this game and the story by Kafka.
Yeah, and I was saying to Mikolaj just before that I love how it when you hear about the technique, you think that it shouldn't work, but it does. And it also intrigues the ear rather than kind of is dissonant or does anything negative to ear. It kind of makes you curious about it more.
You know what's also interesting about this singing technique? You know, we are also used to exploration music in video games, having the melody, having a melodic instrument, very often a solo one. And you've got this one, here in the form of a singer doing the Sprechstimme, and it's like a different kind of paint. It's a melody, but it's like a drunk melody. It's very, very different.
Yeah, I think it just adds a really cool quality. I think like when I see a movie and there's some details in it that maybe I'm not aware of historically, let's say a historic something that takes place in a previous era, but there's a detail in it that I'm not aware of that era, but I just love that because it brings an authenticity to a film. And I think in this sense it's sort of brings an interesting authenticity to the music and the game by using styles that were, from that era. So it just really, I thought it was like a brainstorm that I initially had and that Mikolaj embraced. And fortunately the developer embraced it because it was an odd, perhaps to them it might have seemed odd choice. But I think they totally got into it, and I think they love the score. They're really happy with the score, so that's cool.
Yeah, and I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed it myself. I've been listening to it over the last week or so, and I just constantly kept wanting to hear more in terms of that curiosity vibe. And it was just such a nice mixture of melodic content mixed with kind of that intrigue, like I said before, that it just kind of keeps you wanting to listen to the next one to see what you're going to do next.
Well, that's cool. That's good to hear. That's good to...
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. And I have to say as well, that with the Sprechstimme, the German lyrics you used was actually a mix of your own and from Kafka's actual Metamorphosis text, right?
Yes. Mine was, and both of us chose our own lyrics. So I'll let Mikolaj speak for himself, but I chose to actually take the text of Metamorphosis, and with the assistance of one of my former students who is German, who I teach at USC, and so he took the screen scoring program, which I teach the video game scoring class in, and so he assisted me because, of course, he speaks fluent German, and I took it in high school and can only remember about 24 words. So that was very helpful. And so we found words that fit not only the music, but also fit what was going on at when the music was being used. So we adapted it freely, but I thought it was cool to use it as a source.
Yeah, definitely. And correct me if I'm wrong, but as I was listening with the vocals on the soundtrack, was there also quite a bit of jazz influence? It almost felt almost like scat vibes at times.
Scat vibes in vocals?
Yeah, I can't remember which track now, but I'm sure I remembered one feeling a bit loose in terms of the kind of style.
Well, Mikolaj was there's a little bit of a story behind this the vocal. So I hired a singer in LA who I thought would do a good job. And she's a wonderful singer. Her name is not important, but she couldn't quite pull off this style. It didn't work. So I was very dejected. Not only had to pay her, of course, for her time, but we couldn't use what she had done. So then Mikolaj found this wonderful singer, Joanna Freschel, who is Polish, but specializes in this type of music. And so she came, this is all before COVID, so she came to Mikolaj's, well, you tell the story, Mikolaj, and you just did such a great job directing her and letting her sort of freely, you know, so I don't know if I would describe it as scat, which is sort of the jazz, the improv kind of style, but, you know, I mean, maybe there is a sort of a connection, a freedom that you gave her.
I haven't thought of jazz being in the vocals. We were really trying to be close to the Sprechstimme technique, which I don't think. I mean, maybe Sprechstimme is scat of, you know, early 20th century. Who knows?
Maybe for a layman like myself, it comes across that way.
But you Sam mentioned that there is some, you know, we spoke about jazz before Gary joined us, and you mentioned that there is a little bit of James Bond in there, and absolutely, I agree. But jazz, maybe in the harmonies a little bit here and there, but not in the singing.
Okay, fair enough. And so I wanted to ask you as well, how did this all begin? Like, how did you both first get involved with the project?
I was, giving a lecture here in Warsaw. I don't remember exactly when it was, but I think it was, you know, frankly speaking, everything that's further back in the past than 1 week. I don't really know when it happened. It's just time flies so quickly. So, you know, after the lecture, organizers invited me for drinks to a nearby pub, and during which a group of people approached me and showed this game to me on their iPhone, and asked me if I would be interested in, you know, in writing music for it. And, you know, it looked interesting. At that point, I haven't written any video game involving a bug. Well, in a couple of months, I wrote a bee simulator. It was interesting, but. But yeah, I said yes, and, you know, I get back to drinks. and then you know, a couple months later, they got back to me and gave me materials to score. And as I was looking for the tone, I was looking for, I don't know, melodies and what this game really wanted, I always spend some time with the game at the beginning and wait. And it's important to give up your ideas and sort of let the game tell you what it wants. That's how I feel. And then maybe later you can try to, you know, incorporate something on top of that. But the bedding of the music, the main idea, to me, it comes from the game. And as I was waiting for this to happen, the game was telling me that it wanted, you know, symphonic atonal music. And I was very ecstatic to hear this. And as I was trying out ideas, I had an idea that I wanted to invite Gary to it, because I knew him from our meetings at GDC's. And I always enjoyed our conversations. We always talked about music and intellectual part of it and composers and all that. And I thought Gary would be, you know, great fit for this. And I'm happy that I was right. He was very ecstatic to join in, and that's how it happened.
That's awesome. And how was it for you, Gary, when you first heard about this project?
Well, it was a wonderful invitation from my friend. So that was fantastic. But the idea of a Kafkaesque storyline really intrigued me. So it was both an opportunity to work with someone who I really liked and enjoyed as a friend, and also to do something. We didn't know what we were going to do yet, but I was just thought, oh, that just strikes me as a really cool creative opportunity. I just knew immediately that it wasn't going to be just sort of a standard type of score. It was going to be something that really gave us an opportunity to do something interesting. And you know, as a composer, you're attracted to those opportunities. It wasn't for the money, because this was not like a big paying gig at all. This was more like of a creative opportunity. It's like a famous film composer taking on a small but really interesting film, you know, independent film, because it's just so cool. It's just so interesting. So that was, I guess, how I reacted to the opportunity.
Awesome. And as you said before, Mikolaj, you were kind of asked for a symphonic atonal soundtrack. How detailed was the brief that you were given in terms of what they wanted from the music?
Well, you might have misunderstood. I was talking in metaphor.
Oh, sorry.
I was talking that the game itself spoke to me. That, you know, what my senses told me that was the game, that was the music that they wanted.
Aha.
That the game wanted. They haven't told me what music they wanted. Thank God they didn't. And not that the idea would be bad, but, you know, it's nice in, like, Metamorphosis is a kind of game that it's nice to approach with a, you know, clean slate.
Yes.
So they didn't have any directions what they wanted, what they needed. I think the only thing was to not make it too scary and to maintain some kind of a sense of humor into it. Not a strong in your face sense of humor, but, you know, it's like tongue in cheek kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of that dark irony we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
That was really their only direction to us, to don't make it too scary, you know. And so that was actually very helpful to us, you know, because, I mean, if you analyze the game, you could analyze it as really a kind of a creepy story, you know, and you could go in totally in that direction.
Yeah, but, of course. But,
you know, that was a good reminder to not go in that direction. And I think it makes the game more fun. You know, it changes the way. I mean, music has that ability, which is what's so cool and useful about music. It can really color the way someone...
The project.
Yeah, the project, whether it's a game or a film or a television show or whatever, commercial, you know, an ice cream commercial, whatever it is, you know, the music has an effect. I show my class every year, there's this... really funny video that someone put together with scenes from The Shining, with the famous, you know, Kubrick film.
Yeah.
And it's done as a comedy.
Yes, I've seen this.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So that's where the music helps pull that off. So that's what music does or can do. It can really help define how you perceive something.
But it's also nice. I think the successful games are, well, I'm not sure how broadly received will Metamorphosis be, because it's a small one. But I think it's nice when the project is cohesive. Like, you know, when I looked at the graphics and the movie and what was happening, I didn't have instincts to make it very dark and creepy. I think it was all very, like I said, cohesive in this direction, dark with a twist. And it's nice that we didn't have to force players or listeners to an emotion that wasn't initially in the game.
Yeah, definitely. And did the fact that you are an insect and also the fact that it's first person heavily influence how you approach the soundtrack?
I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, how did that affect? I mean, obviously the insect side intrigues me even more than the first person side.
Yeah, well, the insect, it's just, you know, well, first of all, the way you experience the world is different when you're an insect. You enter places where a human couldn't enter, right? So you write music for those weird areas that us human beings cannot see in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, everything is big, right? Everything, you know, things that normally aren't scary are kind of scary to you, right? The whole idea of being insect is crazy too, and you see it from the first person perspective, and it's therefore it's so more convincing than maybe looking at it as a 2D game, right? Seeing it from the side.
Yeah.
So it definitely has its impact on how you feel and therefore on the music.
Yeah, I mean, humans, we all have our own relationship with how we view insects. You know, it's sort of an interesting thing. We may not think about it very often, but it's not like an animal in the same way we'd perceive a bunny or a dog or a elk or a buffalo or an elephant. These are, we have this sort of like, you know, love, hate, maybe more hate relationship with insects, you know? And
yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So to become one is sort of shocking, you know, it's kind of like the worst thing that could happen in a way. Like, yeah. You know,
yeah. I would probably commit a quick suicide if I was a cockroach, you know, because of all the self-hatred.
Exactly.
Depending who you're around, it might not have to be suicide, you know.
Right, exactly. You could be eaten very quickly.
Yes.
No, cockroaches are so fast and intelligent, you know.
So, but this, of course, you play an intelligent roach, or are you actually become a roach or a beetle? What are you in this?
I think it's intentionally vague, right? Like the original story.
Well, I was by how fast you can go, I was convinced from the beginning that it's a cockroach. And then I was talking to the studio as though you are a cockroach in the game, but they opposed it. So, you know, I still feel it's a cockroach. And some of the lyrics in my songs refer to cockroach. In German, it's Kakerlaken, I think. Funny word, by the way. But I don't think you're supposed to be cockroach for 100%. So
yeah, it's I guess Kafka was vague about what type of insect he became.
But you know what? I define myself as cockroach.
You wrote the music score as a cockroach. You know, you really entered that space.
So, I think the score, part of our score also was written to give that sort of creepy insect vibe that you know you're in that world. So I think we also tried to capture that, you know, not all the time. It was a balance, because you didn't want to play it all the time as a roach or as an insect. Of because there's dramatic aspects of the game that are really important to represent, because you're really trying to save your friend, you know?
Yeah, of course. And that's his main focus. That's his main goal. Even though he's been turned into this insect, he also has to save someone else.
Right. And it's still him. It's even though he is, you know, it's mysteriously, you know, metamorphosized into this
small body. Repulsive body.
Mikolai is obviously very not impressed by insects.
Well, again, we all have it, you know, and yet, if you think about it, I mean, I don't want to get off on insects, but insects are really an important part of the world, you know, that we live in, that you wouldn't want to eliminate them.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for them now.
Yeah. Except for the Anopheles mosquito, if we could eliminate those, that would be good. Then the malaria would be.
I could mention a couple more, like hornets.
Definitely wasps and the whole wasp family.
Cockroaches.
Not bees. Bees are wonderful, and butterflies.
No, bees are great. Bees are fine.
Ladybugs. So there's the, you know, we have our prejudices, shall we say.
Yeah, we definitely do. So obviously you guys are good friends, which really helps when working together on a project. But how did you decide who did what, and how did the collaboration process work? Because it's not the standard process of when two composers get hired and one is kind of like, okay, you're doing exploration music, you're doing combat, you're doing this area, you're doing that area. How did it go?
You know what? The longer I live, the more I am willing to just let things go as they want. And I wasn't planning anything. But I was the one in direct touch with Ovid Works. And I was getting, you know, the requests for music from them. And it just happened that one of the first tracks that I asked Gary to contribute was happening when we enter a bug world in the game. You know, sort of this one of those weird spots that I told you about that we only can, you know, experience as an insect.
Yeah.
And he and Gary wrote, you know, Gary started, you know, doing the 12-tone thing, and it matched very well. And, you know, the next map was from the same area, so it was only natural for him to continue in this manner. And so it just happened this way, that Gary took care of this underworld where we, you know, crawl underneath the floor and you know, places like that. And I took care of things probably a bit closer to the surface or deeper in the game, you know, different than this bug world, so to speak.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, I years ago, when I first started working as a composer, I worked on shows for Mike Post and Pete Carpenter, the A-Team and Magnum P.I., Greatest American Hero. And, of course, I was a ghost for them because they had so much music to write. And that's exactly what we would do every week. Like, so we'd spot the show, and there'd be like two or three of us. And one guy would go, okay, you're doing the bad guys. Okay, now you're playing the A-Team guys.
That's awesome.
And it was just like, and so you'd go home with a set of cues all related to one another, because it just kind of made sense. You would write like maybe a theme for that week's bad guys, you know. So that sort of was that just makes total sense, really, you know, if you're dividing something up. And in this case, it divided fairly equally between these two aspects of the game, so it worked out quite nicely. And yet it wasn't something that we was late given to us. It was just sort of naturally unfolded. So much of this game, actually, and the score for this game was very natural. And I mean that in a just really cool sense, that we didn't take much thinking. The style, we both agreed quickly on it. It just was sort of very painless from all those aspects and very intuitive.
Yeah, and it's awesome when it can flow like that. And I'm so glad to hear that you had such a smooth process. And obviously, having kind of talked and worked together over the years, it must be nice to have that relationship.
So one thing came to my mind recently. You know, as I said before, I'm a big jazz fan. And as such, I'm still mourning the passing of Lyle Mays, who was, as you may or may not know, a keyboardist from Pat Metheny Group, right? He was his co-writer. Yeah. Unbelievable musician, composer, and improviser. It's just such a loss. The biggest loss in 2020, in my opinion, to culture. But I witnessed a video when they are analyzing their work, Pat Metheny's and Lyle Mays, and the way they wrote tunes together, they really did write them together. It wasn't like one piece was done by this guy and the other by the other guy. It's like you see a piece and first eight bars are written by Lyle Mays and the next part is written by Pat Metheny, and then, you know, and so forth. Next time during a collaboration like that, I would love to try that. I would love to try to divide work within a piece between myself and, you know, I'd love it to be Gary and or someone else. I don't know what life will bring, but I would love to try this.
Yeah, no, that sounds really cool.
It would be really cool, yeah.
And what would you say was the biggest challenges of this project?
The challenge right now is to release the soundtrack. It's taking so much time. Oh my god! The game came out like, you know, months ago, and the soundtrack is like any day now. So, this is the biggest challenge really, because we kept being asked about it. So when can we hear the soundtrack? And it's not out yet. So that's the biggest one. Other than that, I think for both of us, it was pure fun and joy. And of course there was work. It wasn't unpleasant work by any means, but it was work. You know, we had our commitments to this project, and, you know, so for instance, making sure that things sound cohesive, making sure that, you know, I use Gary's themes and Gary uses mine themes in his pieces. So, you know, taking care of all this, you know, preparing music for recording session. There are some parts that are like less fun, right? But they have to be done. But it's normal. It's just our life as composers.
Yeah. And what about for you, Gary?
Yeah, I would say the same. This was a fairly painless project. And indeed, the soundtrack, you know, the lawyers, there are lawyers, I guess, you know, there's an old saying that, you know, being nibbled to death by ducks. It's kind of like these lawyers are nibbling this soundtrack to death. I mean, there's not a lot of money to be made in soundtracks for games or for films, for that matter, for anything. Soundtracks do not make a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's just really about getting it out there and having those fans and those people interested.
Gary, maybe they don't know it. Maybe they're like, you know, hoping to get millions of dollars. That's why it's taking so long.
I think so. I think they're going, oh, this is going to be on, this is going to be on like the top 10 radio here, the Sprechstimme. But in reality, it soundtracks don't make a ton of money. But of course, it'd just be wonderful to get it out there, because there are people who I think will enjoy this music and will want to own it or have access to it. So it is what it is, but it is frustrating. And you would think this was like a major, you know, game from, you know, Sony or whatever, but it's a modestly although brilliantly made little game. I mean, it's really a cool project, but it's just not one of these, you know I've worked on games that had budgets of $200 million, so this is well below that, shall we say. But in any event, I would say that this is one of the least painful projects. It was really like where, you know, composers, you know, love the work when you're in what they, you know, what's called flow, you know.
Yeah.
You're basically just writing the music and you're just into it. And it doesn't feel like work at the end of the day. It feels like you really were, you know, involved in something that was just really fun and intellectually stimulating. So there may have been some day. I mean, I had to drive all the way out to the engineer's home. That was a long drive when we mixed it. I hit traffic. But other than
I love that biggest challenge of the project. Well, there was some heavy traffic whenever we had to go.
Exactly. So I'm stymied to think of really anything that I would call, you know, problematic. It just wasn't one of those projects where there was, and I've been involved in stuff, although I'll say this, I've scored films, I've scored television, I've scored games in general. My experience has been that they're less, I mean, that it's not that they don't tell you if they don't like something, but the people tend to be really lovely to work with. That's been my experience.
Yeah, very relaxed and late, yeah.
And do you find that almost a challenge in itself, that you sometimes have to push them to be a bit harder on you, or do you actually find it relieving compared to the TV and film industry?
Well, I can't tell you about the ideal scenario to me. And the ideal scenario to me is when I can do my work and I bounce it back with a person on the other end who knows about music, who feels the music right, who loves the music outside the world of games. And so, you know, I can have an idea and I bounce it back, and there's a partnership. So I love this most. You know, obviously when you work with the AAA stuff, you don't have this kind of freedom. You have to do what you're told, and you know, there's a lot of work. But like I said, the best scenario is like this. Is you have your time to come up with the sound, with the color of the soundtrack, and then it's being sort of tweaked later on by the dialogue, during the dialogue of myself and person who works, you know, like a audio director, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to say that sometimes the deadlines are like too much into the future. Sometimes I find myself working for a long time on one project, and I kind of wish that I could close the project already, but it's, you know, they're not ready. Not because the music is ready and I'm ready to be done with it, but it's just, you know, video games take long time to get done.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that is, it's more an annoyance, you know, because, you know, sometimes something can go on for a year and you've really only spent about a month of actually working on it over that period of time, or 6 weeks, because you're most of the time you're not being, you know, handed anything to work on. So, but it's an open project, and when they need something, they need it, you know, now or whatever. So it you know, if you had your druthers, you know, it would be that it, you know, and the film, my experience with film is like the opposite. You start at a certain date and you've got so many days to, you know, weeks, whatever, to finish it. And it might be 4, 6, even 12 weeks, but then it has to be done. There's a deadline because there's a release date. But games hire you earlier on in the process than films generally. That's not always true, because some films will hire you early and you're reading the script before they even start shooting. That does occur.
Yeah.
But not most of the time. Usually you're hired as they're in the editing process and they're now looking for a composer and trying to decide on musical direction, and they're putting in temp music, etc. So it is a stretched out. It is. But, you know, it is what it is. It's just part of the process. The first game I scored, well, and I scored some games in the 90s, but mostly in the sort of current era. In 2004, I had 60 days to score Destroy All Humans, which to me was like a luxury, because I was scoring TV movies, when I'd get sometimes 3 weeks or 2 weeks or 1 week to write the entire score.
Oh, and wow.
It was painful. That was painful. But
that's intense.
Yeah. Oh, man. I wrote 1 week. I wrote 68 minutes of music in 7 or 8 days. I forget what it was. And
you must forget what you've written by that point. Like, you start writing so much music, you're like, oh, yeah, I did that. I forgot about that one.
I'll tell you, by the end of that one, I questioned whether I wanted to remain in the industry, because it was just so stressful. But
it's grueling, yeah.
But in any event, I would say that is one of the aspects of games that just sort of is what it is now. And you just sort of have to balance that, and you have to juggle balls, because you are often working on more than one project, so you kind of have to go back and forth. And I've learned never to make the people you're working for conscious of it or nervous about your ability to put in the amount of time they need on their project. You don't want to say, oh, I can't work on it this week because I'm doing something else. That's they don't want to hear that.
No, of course.
You know, it's funny, Gary, because when you said I scored some game in the 90s, to me, it's funny how when you say you scored games in '90s, I can say the same thing, but it will mean completely different thing. When I say I scored game in the '90s, it means that I was able to convince my parents to buy me a video game for PC.
Well,
hey, I scored a game.
I've been working since the '80s. I'm a mature composer, but I did score some games in the '90s for a company called Philips Interactive. And they were making games for the hardware they made called CDI that Philips manufactured. That went away.
Yeah.
But I scored 3 games for them. So that was my, they were video games. So that was fun. But it wasn't, video games were not that interesting in the '90s, to be honest. These were slightly because they were like little video trees. So you're actually, it was like scoring a picture, really. You were scoring the picture. They actually had shot these on video and you were scoring the scenes. And
yeah.
But it was 2004 that I really got involved in video games again. And that's when I scored Destroy All Humans.
Now, we kind of covered the biggest challenges of the projects, but to kind of finish off, with a kind of other interesting question, what are your proudest moments of this score and this project?
Well, certainly applying Sprechstimme to our project was an achievement. But overall, soundtrack color is, I think we are both proud of that. I would hate to just point to one piece of music that I'm prouder of than the other ones, because I love them all the same. And I listen to Gary's music. I listened to his music actually today before our interview, just to refresh my memory. And I think there's so much gold in what he wrote. So it's hard to, you know, like I said, to point to just one single moment, like an aha moment.
Yeah, of course.
But one thing that I'm very proud of, well, not proud, but I'm happy that it worked out, is before I invited Gary, I wanted to, now I know it's true because how it turned out. It's like when you have something great, share it, and then it becomes even greater.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what it was and that's what it is.
Nice.
I remember mixing it and sitting and going, this is a really interesting score. This is something that Mikolaj and I have done. This is very special. And I remember, you know, I as I was writing it, and especially as listened to the mixes I did myself with Joanna's vocals. But when I just kind of heard it all come together, because we did record with a live orchestra, we did that. There was an orchestra in Macedonia. We didn't have a big budget, but we had enough to record with a live, and that added so much. And of course, Joanna, and I was just going, this is so cool. This is so unique what we've done, and I was just really excited by this score that we both contributed to. So that was sort of my moment, and that's when I said we need to have a soundtrack. I don't know, how did that soundtrack, I guess you and I discussed it, and maybe Greg was involved, someone who's doing some PR for us, and we said this really does need, because it's just such an unusual, cool, special sound, because you know, to some extent you are wedded to the project. So if a project, you know, is not that interesting, or if they want something quite ambient and that just doesn't give you the ability. I mean, you may do something that just works like gangbusters against picture, but if you take that music outside of the game or the film or whatever, it's not interesting enough to release as a soundtrack. It just, and there's a lot of film scores these days in particular that are so ambient and that they work great with picture, and they're really interesting, but do they stand on their own as music? And I thought this one did and does. So that was really, I think, what really I'm so happy about what we did together.
We all wish more of this kind of soundtrack to do. And the best scenario is when you can write meaningful music that, for the sake of music, and then the soundtrack is broadly received. Not the soundtrack, but the game has a broad, you know, reception at the same time. You know, that's.
I mean, I have to say, it's one of the most unique and fascinating soundtracks I've heard in the last few years. I mean, it definitely stands out, and it's something that's well worth listening to. Thanks. And I really hope that soundtrack comes out soon.
Any day now. As I've been saying for the last 2 months.
Every now and then I see an email from Mikolai to the people and say, so is this, are we getting close now? Are we almost there? And they, yeah, we're almost, just a few more.
I'm writing another one as soon as we're done.
I know.
It's like, seriously. It's like,
it's like so frustrating. But, you know.
I feel like a donkey in Shrek asking, are we there yet? Right. You know, all the time.
Awesome. Well, I have to say it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both on the show again. I want to thank Mikolai Strawinski and Gary Scheinman, as well as Greg O'Connor Reed for helping set this up from Top Dollar PR. And of course, thanks to all our wonderful listeners. Thanks again for joining me, guys, and I hope you have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Sam. Thanks for inviting us. It was a pleasure.
Thanks.
Everyone, this is Sam. Thanks very much for listening to the Sound Architect podcast today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, there are many ways you can support the show, which is incredibly appreciated. Obviously, there's the financial way where you can support us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/sounddesignuk. However, there are many other ways which also help, such as liking, subscribing, reviewing, commenting, and sharing via whatever channel you listen on. Thanks so much for your support already. It really is a work of passion for me, and I'd love to keep sharing the knowledge from all these talented and wonderful people. Thanks again, and catch you on the next episode.
Hey, this is Christian from a Sound Effect podcast. In our latest episode, you will hear about designing sound for Netflix series The Crown and composing music for The Haunting of Bly Manor. Check it out at soundeffect.com/podcast.
Hello, this is Tim from Tonebenders. Check out our new double episode about the sound of the hit series The Queen's Gambit. Part 1 features Eric Hain on the mixing of the series, and Part 2 talks to the sound editorial and Foley team. Listen to these new episodes wherever you find your podcasts or at tonebenderspodcast.com.